Welcome, everyone, to the July 16 TAC meeting. We'll start out our meeting with a roll meeting with the approval of the minutes of the July 9th meeting. Hopefully, everyone on the TAC had a chance to read the minutes, and they were also posted on the website, so if anyone in the audience has a comment, that's where they were. Are there any comments, changes, or omissions on our minutes for the July 9th meeting? Are there any comments from the audience on our minutes for the July 9th meeting? With that, I'll entertain a motion. Whoop. This is just on the minutes.
Yes. Richard Margaretson, just real quick. The comment under my name said, discuss this table in the fine screening report, build out population estimates and water consumption per capita estimate. I've noticed in all the minutes, it says, discuss this. I want it put in there that discusses errors in the fine screening report tables, because I think some of those errors have already been proven out. I don't want it to show in here that this was only a discussion of the tables. I wanted to show that it was a discussion of the errors in the tables.
Okay, I hear that. Generally, in our minutes of previous meetings, we list only the topic of which public input is received. Anyone wishing to get the details, they're available on transcripts of the meetings. Any other comments? With that, I'll entertain a motion for passage of the meeting, of the minutes.
I move that we accept the minutes with the amended changes, as this comment was errors, and that would be what it talked about.
Okay. Go ahead.
I can live with that.
So that would read Richard Margaretson discusses validity of the tables in the draft fine screening report, build up population estimates and water consumption per capita estimates.
Is that so what you're
okay. And seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, thank you. Minutes are passed. Okay. Tonight, the TAC will be discussing the effluent disposal options associated with Los Osos Wastewater Project. At the beginning of the process of developing alternatives for the wastewater project, it was stated that the only requirement of the project was to ensure that the water issues that faced Los Osos were not exacerbated, i.e. the saltwater intrusion would be no worse than it currently is. For those of you who have been following the progress of the water situation, you are aware that the Board of Supervisors has certified a level 3 severity, the most dire of levels, has been established to the project, that the project provides, the more pro it becomes. We hope that in listening to our discussions tonight, you will get a better understanding of the issues associated with achieving greater saltwater mitigation. Public comments and questions will be taken after the three committees have presented their draft of the pros and cons and before the TAC begins its discussion. At that time, only comments and questions pertaining to the alternate methods of effluent disposal will be allowed. If you have any other comment or questions relating to the TAC and its role, there will be a second public input period at the end of the meeting. Questions to the project team will be answered as time permits at the end of the meeting. Please be sure to fill out a public input slip and hand them to Diana if you wish to speak comment periods. Again, I iterate, you must hand the slips to Diana. Please do not come up to here and hand slips to other members of the TAC. You may follow the progress of our pro-con analysis by visiting our website, www.slocounty.ca.gov/pw/LOWWP. Select the TAC page and then pick the link to the working draft pro-con analysis on project alternatives. This report has been updated to include information from last week's meeting. We encourage you to send to us any of your questions or comments on this report. Our email address is lowwp@co.slo.ca.us. And I again wish to acknowledge those of you who have submitted to our website. Your comments have been distributed to the committee for their consideration. I'd like to add two things that I didn't actually have in my meeting here, or actually one. There was an article today in the Tribune, Oso Sewer Vote Aims or Fall. There's two very erroneous statements in that, and I need to set the record clear. In the beginning of the article, it says that the mail to owners by August 28th, that is not correct. The Board of Supervisors will be acting on it in the month of August, and the ballot will probably not go out till sometime in September. The other very important paragraph says that votes in the mail-in election are to be weighed according to each property's value, essentially $1 a vote, because the annual tax would be depend on the parcel's assessed valuation. That is not correct information. It is not based on the property's assessed valuation. It will be based on a special evaluation that has not yet been done of properties in the prohibition zone. There will be a discussion tomorrow at the Board of Supervisors meeting by the assessment engineer and the county, which will delve into the issue of the assessment, property assessment. So I would encourage all of you either to go or to listen to the Board of Supervisors meeting.
Third slide. One more. There it is. What I'd like to do is just run through two slides, and again, I won't do this justice because we're moving so quickly. This is a graphical representation of some of the information presented in the fine screen report, something that came out of the engineering group. I think Bob Simonson worked quite a bit on it, and I like it because it shows graphically some of the concepts that we've been trying to convey in tables and other things. Some of the characters are a little hard to see, but there's some foldouts on the back table there, full-size drawings where you can see this more clearly. Essentially, this slide covers the different methods of disposal that pass through into fine screening and are considered in various project options. And just running through those quickly, starting from the top and working our way across, spray fields is the first option, sort of the spider-looking character there. And the next row of graphics shows the relative capacity of those different options to get rid of the water, to dispose of the water. So spray fields essentially can be used to dispose of the total amount of the flow just because you can simply buy enough spray field to do that. The next column is what we're calling the seawater intrusion mitigation factor. And we needed some way to measure the relative benefit of each of these project options. And the method that was selected is this mitigation factor. How much bang for the buck do you get? How much seawater mitigation do you get for every gallon of water that you use in this disposal method? Well, in the case of spray fields that are outside of the basin, it's essentially zero. That's excluding the potential for bringing any water back if there are water resources on the property that are outside of the basin, but essentially it's a zero. And then if you combine those two, you get the next column over, which shows the total amount of seawater intrusion mitigation that you could get for that option. And then finally, in the far right, you see some little characters that denote what kind of treatment would be required. The brown box is basically secondary treatment, your most basic treatment plant. You'll see some of those with a little orange box next to the treatment plant. That's if you need to filter the water and disinfect it to a tertiary level. And then on the right side, these little green cylinders denote the need for either total or partial removal of the nitrogen in the water. So quickly going through, the next option is a reuse option. That's out on the cemetery. That's one potential reuse site that has up to 50 acre feet of capacity. Basically, if we ask the cemetery folks to turn off their well and take wastewater, treated wastewater, we'll get some benefit to seawater intrusion, but the mitigation factor there is only 0.1 or 10%. That means for every gallon that we use on the cemetery, we get a tenth of a gallon of benefit, and that's because it's so far to the east. What we really want is folks to turn off or reduce the use of their wells, their lower aquifer wells, that are to the west. We want those wells to be backed off by the coast. So the cemetery, because it's far in the east, would only be a 0.1 mitigation factor. The next item down is to ag reuse. Now, there's two items under ag reuse, and it's very important that you differentiate between the two because the benefit is very different. The first item is what we call just in lieu or ag reuse, and that's where we ask the farmers to turn off their wells. We give them tertiary reclaimed water, and we have some benefit to the groundwater basin. But because their wells are so far to the east in the lower aquifer, you only get a 0.1 mitigation factor, meaning every gallon you use, you only get a tenth of a gallon of benefit if you just ask them to turn off their wells. Now contrast that with the next item, which has the little arrow heading back, and that's ag exchange. That's when we actually drill our own municipal wells out there in the east of town, and we take that water that would have been pumped by ag, and we bring that water back in the community for our own water supply. And when we do that, we can back off on our deeper, lower zone wells that are to the west of the community by the seawater intrusion critical zone. And that has a very substantial impact. It's a 0.55 mitigation factor. And so that has a much larger capacity to reduce seawater intrusion. One thing that should be said about ag, there's an assumption that ag exchange and ag reuse would only be able to account for about 460 acre feet. That's an assumption. There's about 800 acre feet of ag, total ag use happening east of town, but we're, the county's not assuming that you would be able to get all of that ag property using tertiary water. So there's an assumption there. The other key assumption to note is that based on input from the National Water Research Institute panel, some partial removal of nitrogen may be necessary in order to achieve what we call agronomic rates. And that means you'd only apply the amount of nitrogen that the plants need. And that's highly dependent on the crop and how many crop turns occur per year on any given piece of land. So those are some of the important assumptions for those two agricultural-related disposal methods. The next two methods relate to the Broderson disposal site. And the first is basically looks like a little leach field. And that is the option where we put about 400,000 gallons per day, that's 448 acre feet per year, up at Broderson. And if we only do that much, we will not have to harvest that water. And by doing that, you actually increase the water levels in the upper aquifer, and you drive some additional water down into the lower aquifer. So you're basically inducing more recharge into the lower aquifer. And that will require full denitrification, which shows there on the right by the full cylinder. The next option is similar to ag exchange. It's a Broderson disposal option where we're percolating the water, and then we're putting so much in the ground that we'll actually need to harvest a portion of that water. I guess you could call it downstream, but really it's what we call down gradient. Here in the low-lying areas encrusted by the sea and near the bay, you'd have to, what we call, harvest a portion of that water, pump it out to manage groundwater levels, and you get a relative benefit for doing that. The last item is under conservation. When we take all of those different project components, we can piece them together into different whole projects, disposal projects. And what the county has done is they looked at essentially several different levels of project. And for our purposes, we're going to focus on levels 1, 2, and 3 in this slide. But just so those of you who aren't familiar with the fine screening report, so you know the same levels that we're talking about, a level 0 would be essentially taking all the water outside the basin that's currently coming from our septic tanks and not getting any benefit. In fact, we're making things worse in level 0. So nobody really thinks that's an option that can be permitted. So level 1 with two projects, 1A and 1B, essentially takes us back to status quo. And our status quo is that we have 400 to 500 acre feet of seawater intrusion, so it's not necessarily a good place to be. But this is for purposes of analyzing which projects really are related to wastewater and which projects are really related to water. So there's two level one projects contemplated there. One of those projects depends exclusively on the spray field, a very large spray field. That's level 1B. And one of the projects depends on a combination of ag reuse and spray fields, as well as cemetery reuse. Level 2A and 2B, those are projects that by definition require no financial participation on behalf of the purveyors, and really very little action on behalf of the purveyors. I'm sure there'll be some discussion on that point. But both level 2 projects include a substantial portion of the flow going to the Broaddrson effluent disposal site. So when you see level 2, you're going to see Broaddrson. And for those projects, the amount of seawater intrusion mitigation is maximized by putting that water at Broaddrson, increasing those water levels in the upper aquifer, and that water drives down into the lower aquifer. There is one of those options, which is level 2A, that has a substantive ag component, but that's just ag reuse. There's no ag exchange in level 2A. So essentially, your level 2 projects are primarily related to the Broaddrson site. Level 3 projects take us to a balanced basin under current water demand. So basically, for the developed properties, we would be at a balance. There would be no further advance of the seawater intrusion. Those projects require a very high level of participation on behalf of the purveyors, something that the purveyors are looking very seriously at in terms of performing that participation. And in those two projects, you essentially have one that maximizes the use of the Broaddrson site and one that maximizes the use of ag exchange. Level 3A is a project that maximizes the use of Broaddrson. It would require full tertiary treatment with full denitrification for everything that's taken to Broaddrson, and you'd be able to also use a substantive amount of water on ag and then exchange that water for potable water. So you have both Broaddrson and ag exchange in level 3A, and that brings you to a balanced basin. In level 3B, the very bottom project, it avoids here. It is achievable without the importation of water. However, it's not shown in the chart, and it's not analyzed in detail in the fine screening report. That level 4 is to balance the basin at the build-out of the community. And so that's a brief discussion of these various options. I'm sure we'll have a lot of good follow-up here.
Thank you very much, Rob. I think that was quite informative to our folks watching on television and those here, and will form the basis of our discussions as we proceed. So we're going to start our committee reports. First, we'll go through the same order with engineering giving their report, and that's going to be today Bob Simonson.
I want to start by letting people know there's 5 copies of those charts up there. Engineering group, this time we thought, well, maybe we'll mix a little graphics with the verbiage because sometimes it's kind of hard to follow the text as we're going along. So, and also I wanted to let you know that the basis of our pro-con was mainly from tables 2.3, 2.5, 2.6, and 2.7. And that's what those graphics are, is a graphic representation of those 4 tables. Okay. Our criteria, our first criteria, is level of control over disposal options, a multifaceted approach that does not depend on third parties. In other words, we want to be independent of outside parties in the way of contracts and them having to depend on them for agri use or spray fields. So level 1A includes spray fields, agricultural reuse, conservation, cemetery reuse, and storage. The pros are the spray field, conservation program, and storage features are under the direct control of the wastewater purveyor. The con is that the cemetery and ag reuse programs will require contracts with the end users. Level 1B is spray fields, conservation, and storage. The spray field conservation program and storage features are under direct control, so again, they're a pro, and again, the cemetery and ag reuse programs require contracts. Level 2A is basic, well, it has spray fields, Broderson at half capacity, agricultural reuse, conservation, cemetery reuse, and storage. The same thing over again, the spray fields, but adding Broderson to it, the conservation program and storage features are all under the purveyor's control, so they're a pro. And the Broderson leach field is already owned by the wastewater purveyor, so that's a pro. The cemetery, again, the cemetery reuse, conservation, cemetery reuse, and storage. The pros, again, are the same for spray fields, Broderson leach field, conservation program, and storage features, all being under the control of the wastewater purveyor, and same for Broderson leach fields. The con, cemetery and agricultural reuse programs will require contracts with end users again. The use of harvest wells will require participation of the water purveyors, which is different than the others that in levels 2 to 1. And then there is uncertainty associated with operating the Broderson leach field at 3/4 capacity. And that's questions dealing with liquefaction and daylighting downhill. Level 3B is spray fields, agricultural reuse, conservation, cemetery reuse, storage, water purveyor shift. The spray field conservation program and storage features are under the control of the water purveyor, so they're pros. Cemetery and agricultural reuse programs will require contracts again, and it requires a higher level of purveyor participation. So that's a con. Our second criteria is retain water in the basin for sustainability and increased yield and seawater intrusion mitigation. Level 1A, spray fields, agricultural reuse, conservation, cemetery reuse, and storage. The pros, conservation when coupled with reducing pumping from the western lower zone wells provides a seawater intrusion mitigation factor of 0.55. Export of effluent out of the basin to spray fields is a favorable option as a short-term situation associated with startup operations and emergency discharge. Agricultural reuse and cemetery reuse of recycled water translates to decreased pumping from the eastern lower zone wells. And that provides a seawater intrusion mitigation factor of 0.1. This option reduces the seawater intrusion rate by 140 acre feet per year. The cons on this, in the long term, export of effluent outside of the groundwater basin will have a detrimental effect on the sustainable yield of the groundwater basin. This option exports 686 acre feet per year out of the groundwater basin. Without the Broaderson leach field, the project has no means for directly recharging the upper zone of the groundwater basin, because in this level, there aren't any, the Broaderson leach fields, 90 acre feet per year. The cons for 1B are, in the long term, export of effluent outside the groundwater basin will have a detrimental effect on the sustainable yield of the groundwater basin. This option exports 1,190 acre feet per year out of the basin. And again, without the Broaderson leach fields, the project has no means of recharging the upper zone. Level 2A has spray fields, Broaderson at one-half capacity, agricultural reuse, conservation, cemetery reuse, and storage. Conservation, when coupled with reduced pumping from western low zones, again, has a 0.55 seawater intrusion mitigation factor. And again, exporting out of the basin with the spray fields is a con, it's a pro for the short term only. A limited amount for the cons, a limited volume of effluent is exported out of the basin to spray fields. This option exports 232 acre feet per year. Still under 2A, the pros for agricultural reuse and cemetery reuse decreases pumping from the eastern lower zone wells, which has a mitigation factor, seawater mitigation factor of 0.1. The Broaderson leach field recharge will have a seawater mitigation factor of 0.22. And this option reduces seawater intrusion rate by 240 acre feet per year. 2B has spray fields, Broaderson at half capacity, and conservation and storage. Again, conservation has seawater intrusion mitigation factor of 0.55, so that's a plus. And we have the short-term advantages of exporting the effluent through the spray fields as a pro. And again, the Broaderson leach field has a 0.22 seawater intrusion mitigation factor. The con, long-term export of effluent outside the basin will have a detrimental effect. In this case, we have 742 acre feet per year out of the groundwater basin. And the last pro is this option reduces the seawater intrusion rate by 190 acre feet per year. Level 3A, spray fields, Broaderson at 3/4 with harvest wells, agricultural exchange, conservation, cemetery reuse, and storage comprise level 3A. Conservation, we have the seawater mitigation factor again of 0.55. Cemetery, 600 acre feet per year. Level 3B has spray fields, agricultural exchange, conservation, cemetery reuse, storage, water purveyor shift. Again, conservation, 0.55 under the pros, cemetery reuse, intrusion mitigation of 0.1, agricultural exchange, a saltwater mitigation factor of 0.55, and the short-term benefit of the spray fields will be there for startup and emergency discharge. And with a water purveyor shift in pumping to the upper zone, coupled with all of the measures of this option, seawater intrusion is reduced by 550 acre-feet per year. The cons: in the long-term export of effluent outside of the groundwater basin has a detrimental effect. This option exports 680 acre-feet a year out of the groundwater basin. And without the Broderson leach field, there's no means for directly recharging the upper zone of the groundwater basin. Our third criteria was cost of various disposal options and energy consumption. Option 1A, which is spray fields, agricultural use, conservation, cemetery reuse, and storage. The pro is construction costs are $12,700,000 to $14,300,000. Operation and maintenance costs are $100,000 to $190,000 per year. This option, the con, is that this option will lead to the need to import water from outside the basin. Importation of water will have a construction cost of $3.9 million and an operations and maintenance cost of as much as $1,200 per acre foot. This option will require a higher level of treatment also. Level 1B, which is spray fields, conservation, and storage, construction costs are $12.8 million to $15.6 million. Operation and maintenance costs are $125,000 to $275,000 per year. This option will also lead to the need for imported water from outside the basin, and again, imported water is expensive. Level 2A, spray fields, Broderson at half capacity, agricultural reuse, conservation, cemetery reuse, and storage. Construction costs $13.2 million to $13.9 million. Operation and maintenance costs $400,000 to $444,000 per year. This option will also lead to the need for imported water, which is expensive. And this option will also require a higher level of treatment. Level 3A has spray fields, Broderson at three-quarter capacity with harvest wells, agricultural reuse, conservation, cemetery reuse, storage. Construction costs $25.6 million to $27.3 million. Operation and maintenance approximately $410,000 per year. This option also leads to the need for imported water from outside the basin and all the expenses associated with it. It also requires a higher level of treatment. Level 3B, spray fields, agricultural reuse, conservation, cemetery reuse, storage, water purveyor shift. Construction costs $26 million to $29.8 million. Operation and maintenance, $130,000 and up. We decided not to use the high figure because we couldn't figure out why it was there. This option will also lead to the need to import water from outside the basin and all the associated costs, and it requires a higher level of treatment.
Thank you very much, Bob. I just would like one clarification. You use the term need to import water. Could you just add need to import? What is that need to import water to do, to bring it to total?
To bring the basin in balance.
Okay, to bring it into balance. Thank you. With that, I'd like to go to the Environmental Committee. Marshall, okay.
I'll be giving a report for Maria, who is not here today. We chose to take a little different approach. Primarily, instead of looking at the combinations which give us the levels, we chose to look at each one of the components separately. So we looked at spray fields separately, cemetery in lieu, the ag exchange, ag reuse, urban reuse, and the leach field percolation ponds as separate components to look at the pro-cons of each one of those components. And then when they're combined together in the various combination projects, that those could be combined together. I think one of the things that the working group wanted to clarify is just because we separated these out as individual components, we truly believe that the final project needs to be a combination of these components, that no one component solves the whole problem. Except I guess you could argue that spray fields did, but you'd taking a whole heck of a lot of water out of the basin. So with that as an introduction, what we did was then we looked at spray fields and the pro-cons of that. The one thing for the, and I'll start with the cons and go back and forth. The one thing that says, and it does allow the most future flexibility because you haven't gone and invested in a system then other than the land cost, so it does leave other options available down the road. The cons are that there is the loss of water. There's no exchange of reuse, so basically that water going to spray fields is lost. And I think in answer, this goes along with what Bill's question was, we're basically taking the water out of the basin and has to replace it in some way, shape, or form. A con is that it's only a seasonal usage. It can't be used during the rainy season because only so much water can be applied. The salt loading in the soils from the irrigation on the land, the water that's being applied will have a heavy salt content in it. At some point, we'll load the soils with salt. Not to the extent we don't believe that they have the selenium issues in the Central Valley, but there certainly will be salt loading on the soil. The chlorination required, we were moving that to the con side here. In consultation with Rob, he said that may not be the case. We were led to believe that chlorination would be required with spray fields, so we'll just leave that off for future clarification. There is no saltwater intrusion mitigation, obviously, if we're taking all the water out of the basin. And then there would be a negative impact from the trenching for the pipeline to the spray fields. The degree of impact would be dependent upon the treatment plant location. If the plant was located on one of the cemetery area sites, there would obviously be less impact than if it was located on the site adjacent to where we're sitting right now. The last con would be the unknown future regulatory requirements as to using this water in spray fields. Although there may not be restrictions from regulatory agencies today, there may be some down the road and in the future which can't be anticipated at this point. And the footnote to the spray fields is due to the fact that the working group could not agree on this. There certainly will be undetermined natural habitat impacts by the spray fields. We're creating a green environment and an entirely different environment in dry lands. Whether that's a pro or a con depends on your perspective here. Like I said, the committee could just not agree on that. There definitely will be habitat impacts, and obviously there will be visual impacts because you'll have a green patch where there used to be brown summer land. So we'll leave that to others to make a decision on whether that's a pro or a con. Looking at cemetery in lieu, the pro, and maybe it's a con, but there's minimal saltwater intrusion mitigation here, and we didn't use the numbers that everybody else used, which we know are available in the fine screening report, but relative to the others, there would be minimal saltwater intrusion mitigation. The pro is that the purveyor's cooperation is not required, and if it is located adjacent to the treatment plant on one of the cemetery sites, there would be minimal construction impacts from the trenching. The con is, again, that it's seasonal. It does require partial denitrification. It does require tertiary treatment. And, again, there would be unknown future regulatory requirements. Moving on to urban reuse, and we made an administrative decision here to restrict our analysis to urban reuse of shallow wells only on the school sites, because we believed that as far as urban reuse goes, that was the most note to shallow, or pardon me, to urban reuse is the fact that we did look at a purple pipe system, but we deemed it was to be infeasible because of significantly higher construction costs. In reality, you're trenching twice. You'd be putting a sewer line in a street and then adjacent to it another trench for purple pipe, which would double the environmental impacts, and it would require cooperation by the purveyors. And we didn't believe that those costs, when taken with the shallow wells drilled on the school sites, provided significant additional benefits. So we put that out as a footnote rather than as part of the analysis. Ag reuse, again, I don't know if it's pro or con, but there is minimal saltwater intrusion mitigation. And again, the pro is purveyors' cooperation not required. The cons are that, again, it's seasonal. Partial denitrification is required. Tertiary treatment is required. And probably one of the biggest cons here is the farmers' cooperation is required. My next line is there's a typo, but there is a trenching for a pipeline, but it's not for the spray fields. But there would be a trenching from wherever the treatment plant is to wherever where the ag reuse facility is. So there would be that. Again, on the ag reuse, there would be unknown future regulatory requirements, which we see as a con. We believe flexibility is a pro, but we think when we're putting it outside our hands into the hands of a regulatory agency that that's a con. Ag exchange, really there's only one pro, and that one pro is it's the higher saltwater intrusion mitigation based on just these components. The farmer's cooperation required actually is a con here, not a pro, so that needs to be moved over to the con column. Again, we have the seasonal, partial denitrification, tertiary treatment, purveyor's cooperation required, and farmer's cooperation required. Again, trenching for a pipeline. In this particular case, there would be a pipeline from town to the facility.
And another one back,
potentially. And again, unknown future regulatory requirements. And last on our analysis was leach field percolation ponds, looking at Broderson. And we did not split that into the two subsets. We chose just to say without harvest wells because we just believe because of the necessity of participation by the purveyors and the permitting issues attendant to using harvest wells that that was just not a feasible alternative. So we did look at leach field percolation ponds without the harvest wells. The pro is that there's significant saltwater intrusion mitigation. Tertiary treatment is not required. Purveyor participation not required if we don't use harvest wells. And the biggest pro, I think, in this regard is that it's the only alternative that allows recharge of both the upper and lower aquifers. The con is that full denitrification is required. You can skip that line, the next line. And again, tertiary treatment is not required, or is it required, Ron? It is not required. There will be additional construction out there, though, because there are monitoring wells required for the recharge in Broderson, and that would be additional construction impacts and costs. And there would be grading impacts on the existing habitat.
Very similar that the environmental group did. It's after the cost-benefit analysis, there is a breakdown by each option for reuse disposal. So I'm going to start with that. I'll try not to be repetitive. But I did want to get it all in one table, that not only the pros and cons, but also the mitigation factors, the cost numbers. So if you're, I know it's hard to see the screen, but you can see the cost for spray fields. The biggest concern, again, is losing water out of the basin. And even though it has full capacity, there may be other options that can give us that full capacity without having to pipe to Tonini, and also without, you know, we still may lose water in the basin, but other things that may be less expensive, alternatives to spray fields on Tonini. And, of course, it's very expensive to buy such a large chunk of land, and it will still require winter storage. Urban reuse, even though there are small acre feet that we can use. It's still a high mitigation factor, so we were kind of looking at all of that. And I think we attached the numbers for tertiary, both to construction as well as to O&M. So that just gives you a little, it fleshes out a little bit more of what environmental has already presented. On ag reuse for in lieu, you can see the numbers there. It has some capacity. We know that that's going to be a slow ramp up time to get agreements. And we know that the additional treatments have a price tag. You can see the tertiary treatment adds $3.5 million to construction and another $30,000 to $100,000 for O&M costs. If you go down to Ag Exchange, that has tremendous potential for recharge, but it comes at a cost. And again, we always want to ask ourselves, what's the trade-off? When you're paying that cost, do you get the benefit? So I think that's pretty much what this discussion is about, and it's an ongoing discussion. We'll find that it goes on and on. Broderson, we just took a look primarily at the half load because we are aware of many, many questions regarding three-quarters load or higher loads. And also remembered that Dr. T, or the NWRI, specifically said that if Broderson is used, it is important to evaluate the compliance with new DHS groundwater recharge reuse criteria. So there's not only some price tags, but there's also some compliance issues there. And finally, in storage, one of the things that came up was, hey, if we do use Broderson, why not make it into a constructed wetlands? One of the other things, however, that was discussed in Chapter 1 was constructed wetlands for storage and said, okay, we're going to bring that back to you essentially when we talk about storage. But Chapter 2 didn't come back to that. But when we talked about sites, if you recall those conversations, we said, hey, you know, if we do something out of town, for instance, at Jacomazzi, there may be room on Brannan, perhaps both for capital cost and for O&M. And other factors such as a slow ramp-up period for developing agreements with farmers. Also on the cons, you want to be aware of those land acquisition costs in addition to the construction costs. So we've gone through that pattern for each level, 1A, 1B, 2A, et cetera, took it all the way out to 3B. And as you follow the logic through that, you begin to see some things shaking out depending on your criteria and your values, your core values. For instance, one of the things on 3B that kind of stuck right out was you're paying more for this, but you're getting less bang for the buck. So you kind of ask yourself the question, okay, is this a smart thing to do? I think I'm going to pause at that point. Oh, I forgot the last piece, that cost-benefit analysis lays it all out, again, with numbers. You can see we were just playing with a lot of numbers in this chapter. There's different ways to present the information. I don't think we wanted to overdo things, but everyone has a different way of looking at it, and so we just wanted to present these different ways of looking at reuse and disposal. And I think the numbers kind of speak for themselves, so I'm not going to go over each individual number. But you, going back to engineering's group, and you compare it with this table of cost-benefit analysis, you kind of ask yourself, okay, what's the difference in the price tag, and how much mitigation are you going to get for that? So that was the intent behind this table.
Okay. Thank you very much. And you're right, there are a lot of numbers, not only this chapter, but this whole report has been that way, so I'm glad you can get your arms around it to some extent. Okay, with that, we're going to move to our public comment period. And if you haven't already passed in a slip, please give one to Diane. Okay, we're going to allow 3 minutes, and we're going to start off with Don Asquith, followed by Julie Tacker.
Don Asquith, Los Osos. Hi again. as the only defector from the committee, I don't want to be critical in any way. I just have a couple of questions. I did submit some comments way back right after I resigned from the committee. I assume those have been considered, but I didn't hear anything. Really would change is the rate at which it was going in the bay. Eddie said he would talk to the county about that. I just wondered, Rob, if staff has gotten any feedback from the regional board on that. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, you can ask questions, but we're going to answer all the questions at the end of public comment. So
people
are writing down your questions.
That's a question. A question for John Brady. I understand that the Golden State is doing some experimental work on denitrification of pumped water. You have to wait till the end. But I think that's an important part of all of this, and because it would change some of the scenarios, I think, if it's feasible. And I'm just wondering how that was going. And with that, I have to go to the back.
Julie Tacker, followed by Jeff Edwards.
Good evening. Thank you all for your work on this committee. I don't envy you. Disposal, reuse, recharge has been the Achilles heel to every project before, and I'm afraid it is the Achilles heel to the projects ahead of us, unless we do exactly what you're doing, analyze these components. But I think the one-size-fits-all approach of the prior projects can't be the way we go again. So using the tools in the toolbox is important. And these are just some of them that I've seen analyzed here today. And I kind of perused the rough screening report again today and saw the creek discharge and the disposal injection wells were dropped at that time, and I'd have to say that that's unfortunate. In the scope of what you're working on, to have gone that extra increment to have that analysis before us for our future and have another set of tools in the toolbox would have been prudent. I'm sorry we don't have a level 4 analysis for the same reasons. You people are working very hard at this level. The engineers have worked. The county's working, and we don't have that final big picture in front of us because we haven't gone that extra mile. So that's unfortunate. I'm very concerned with the Tanini Ranch spray field disposal option. Even temporarily, to throw our water away, it's gone, and we can't get it back. So those stranded assets of pipes and pumps to take it out there will be also lost if we somehow bring back the incremental projects that our future will develop. So that one concerns me probably the most, because we have analyzed these other approaches in the recent years, and that spray field option is very, very expensive, it's risky, and the water's...
I've heard about a short-term fix, a temporary fix. I think those concepts really aren't applicable here. I think we need to talk about long-term solutions. the notion of exporting water from our basin, that is moving water east of the creek, in my view, is not productive. We need the water where the water is, and that's in the groundwater basin. We've fought to move a treatment facility out of town, but I think we want to keep the water in our basin, in town. So to the extent that we can do that, I think it's important. The rough screening excluded the creek discharge. I think that's a mistake. I think the creek discharge represents a significant component to a discharge program. It's as important as the Broderson site, in my opinion. And I think we need to continue to keep that in mind and look at the options there. The Paso Robles Formation is exposed to the creek bottom. That creek is dry in the summertime. I think it has potential. We've been discouraged from using that, or you have, because of regulations. And I think it's, you know, it's a sad situation when this project and all of its varied components is driven by these respective agencies, whether they're the Coastal Commission or the Regional Board or DHS. We need to do this project on our own, and I know there's regulatory realities, but we need to fight a little harder for certain things. I have several questions. First of all, a comment. I think the conservation number at 160 acre feet a year is low. I think we're capable of more than that. Something on the order of 250 acre feet a year, I think, is achievable without a lot of strain. I have several questions, and I'll pose those before I wrap up. I'm curious about how physically, what kind of design is contemplated for the Broderson site. I've read about leach fields. That seems to take up offer very little volumetric space to discharge wastewater. It would seem that the gravity wells that were actually installed, a couple prototype wells were installed up at the Broderson site, and those are hundreds of feet deep and offer a lot of volume. Plus, they get the water down deeper and eliminate or reduce potential of daylighting. So I'm curious about what the design is intended for Broderson. I heard something about the Department of Health Services having some additional or newer regulations. I'm curious about those and what those entail. And then one of the items was storage. And I guess the question is, what do you do after the storage? Thank you.
Thank you. It looks like our timer is Bob. Bob here? No, he's not. Okay. Let me see if I can fix our timer here. One moment. Okay, we won't play with any more. Lacey Cooper followed by Bo Cooper.
That's right. Hi, so I guess you're answering questions at the end right. Of everybody's comments. Okay. Oh, I had a question.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, my question was, so you're answering the questions at the end of the whole... Public comment.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So I had just a couple questions. I'm confused about Broderson. You say that at half capacity, it's 448 acre feet per year, and I was wondering where that number comes from, and how does it relate to when there was criticism of Broderson. People were saying that only 8 to 10% of Broderson would actually percolate, and then they said the rest would migrate out to see some of the modeling. So I didn't know how that related to the 448 acre feet per year. Then my other question was for Rob Miller. I didn't understand. He had one on his chart where we were drilling our own wells out in ag land. out in Hagland, and bringing the water back, I just wanted another clarification. I wasn't understanding how that was working, you know, a little more detail there. And also, I guess I have a question about gray water. That wasn't discussed, where perhaps gray water could be done on individual properties. I don't know if that was a possibility, where you're not running it through your septic tank, if that's a possibility. I think that's it. I think the toilet retrofit looked like it was, that seems to be something that would be cost effective and needs to be done right away on everybody's home. We keep talking about it, but it's been years, and it seems like an easy way to save save water. And I guess I'll leave, since it wasn't covered in this report, I'll save my comments on Pio Lombardo for later. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Beau Cooper, followed by Keith Weimer.
Good evening, Beau Cooper. I'd like to talk about levels 1 through 4 for the water severity. As we know, we're in a level severity 3. So in my mind, water is at least as important as the wastewater. And to do the wastewater without a water component, without really considering that, is harmful to the community. I'm reading from the fine screening report ES2, which relates to Table 2.2. It says the wastewater project can be an important first step to solving water resource problems. And later on it says, seawater intrusion is the single best benchmark that quantifies the water resource problem. So I think we need to go towards level 3 or 4 because the water is the essential thing. Without water, we can poop as much as we want, but we can't be there. So we need that. I do think that we may have the authority to do that. I'm looking at the mandate push, do what the community needs, which I think is a level 3 or 4. So I advocate thinking on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Keith Weimer, followed by Al Barrow.
Keith Weimer, I want to thank you all once again for this difficult job you're doing. I am a little frustrated again, and I'm going to state it, that we're working with a document that has been shown to have problems, and it would sure be a lot better process to me if all of the questions related to the document and the number and the sources of the figures were fully vetted and looked at and agreed upon before there's a pro-con analysis based upon those. So I'm frustrated there. There's a couple of assumptions and assumptions about numbers that they're a little troubling. There are experts, obviously, that disagree with how much disposal Brodersen can accept. And that 0.22 mitigation factor seems to be somewhat arbitrary. Experts will say that will not take that much, and there could be problems. I'm wondering what happens to the other 0.78. Also, experts have said that industry standard for dealing with groundwater intrusion is in lieu reuse, and I think that needs to be looked at a lot harder. Reason for the other assumption seem to be that I have trouble with is that purveyor participation is not being considered at this time. I think that purveyor participation should be considered, and the county team should be finding out and looking into the laws that allow it to mandate purveyor participation if necessary, so that we can begin to get an idea of how much it's really going to cost to do some of this reuse. I don't think that the assumption that a great deal of infrastructure reconstruction is necessary for the reuse of water. I think also that obviously the centralized system, which, you know, a particularly strong element of that is that there will be reuse of water, and an effective purple pipe system should be definitely looked at now and not later. The NWRI report, remember, said that there should be an effort to get a waiver for putting purple pipes in the same trenches with the wastewater pipes. And I think that should be looked at now because obviously that affects cost a great deal. Okay, so these assumptions should be questioned and some of these things should be looked at now so we have an accurate assessment of what, you know, the costs really are here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Weimer. We now have Alvaro followed by Frank Asilio.
Thank you. I just brought this photo of the...
Yep.
That's a good idea. Good evening.
No, you're still...
It's a plot. It's a right-wing plot. The ReThugs are after last project. Maybe I'm mistaken about that, Rob, but would you clarify that? And the term reuse versus disposal. Disposal implies that you're disposing of the wastewater that's treated. Reuse means that you've reached another level and you're going to reuse it, and it changes to a general benefit. That's really an important issue, and I think Rob can address that. And I'd like to read this. On page 7573 of the fine screening, the discussion assumes certain denitrification requirements when the SWI mitigation of the two main wastewater purveyors is taken into account. There's about around 980 feet per year that can be achieved without 7 milligrams per liter nitrogen. Golden State Water has said that they are going to mitigate 420 acre feet with their system, which was referred to by Don Asquith, the ionization of the upper aquifer. And then there was a conversation that the blending of the upper and lower aquifer by the CSD purveyor would probably recover 200 acre feet. That reduces the draw from the lower aquifer, 160 acre feet. Also of conservation, San Luis sod and soil is probably the best target for effluent reuse because of its, number one, you won't have any clogging of soil because they run their mat, then they pick it up, and then they take it out. So that they would have a hard time not wanting that because it gives them their nitrogen and it saves their pumping cost. So it's money in their pocket. All of this reduces the energy draw from for denitrification and the high level of treatment, as ag spray can be used for most of the disposal, as safe basin yield is almost already met. Also, the pond
you,
design for build-out.
I'm
finishing up.
Okay,
it's my last sentence. The pond designed for build-out. So much freeboard and storage exists that INI is not a problem, so septic tanks do not need replacement as a precaution. The flow will be much less than capacity until build-out, which could be decades away. This gives
Thank
a
you.
Lot
Al,
of flexibility.
Al.
I'm almost done. Just three more words. In management and treatment requirements, a zero charge exchange. You should be interested in what we're saying
Thank
rather
you,
than
Al.
Your time clock.
Everything I said meant nothing to you.
Frank Asilio, followed by Chuck Cicina.
Frank Asilio, Los Osos. I'd like to remind this committee that AB 2701, if you haven't read it lately, you might want to go back and review it, because in that section it does say the county has may deal with the saltwater intrusion as well as water quality. That was added, not by county's request, but by people's request. And the senators thought that was a valid issue, and they added requested that be amended, 2701, to add that particular section in there so the county would not only deal with wastewater, but can deal with the other issues as well. And I'm always disappointed when I hear they don't want to deal with it. I'd like to bring up the comments that this will bring about mitigation, saltwater mitigation. I'm questioning and then evaluate it later down the road to see if we can do additional build out. Also, the acre foot cost is low, $1,200 per acre foot. I believe Morro Bay is paying $1,400 per acre foot. Also, we would have to pay for the cost of pipe from San Luis to Morro Bay. That's already in there. That our cost. We would also have to pay for cost for a pipe from South Bay Boulevard and Highway 1 to bring it across state property, which would be interesting with all the regulatory agencies involved to bring that straight across. So I don't think that's an option. I think that's an option that may come about maybe. Also, I think the purveyors, not participation. Actually, I think participation of the purveyors is a pro, not a con. I think it's very important. They have a financial incentive to be involved, to see that there is a reliable water source for their customers. And so I would switch that to a pro, not a con. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chuck Cicino, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good evening, TAC. Thank you for all your hard work. Chuck Cicino is my name. I think you need to look at a project that has the highest level of water protection available. I mean, we need to provide for build-out without importing water. And that seems that you can anticipate the interest of the water purveyors and their participation fully. I don't understand why that's even a question. It seems like water reuse and reclamation are two of the keys to reducing pumping from the lower aquifer, which is the key to saltwater intrusion mitigation. Why no cost benefit of gray water systems and purple pipe? We need the numbers to really, really make decisions about the future. We're talking 50 to 100 years from now in terms of water. So let's think long term. And if the cost of purple pipe is high now, the cost of importing water needs to be compared against that many years from now. We heard earlier about discharge to both the creek and the bay. If you're going to talk to the water board about those things, and I certainly encourage all options on the table, I think the creek discharge probably stands a better chance given the new state marine reserve regulations. And I think putting anything directly into the bay is going to cause problems, but maybe a dry creek would be easier. Broderson, I'm still puzzled about application rates. You talk about half of the 800,000 gallons per day that the previous Tri-W project was going to use there, but when you look at EPA manuals from 1980 through February of 2002, water board waste discharge requirements, AB 885, the text of the proposed regulations, all of these talk about application rates for septic tank effluent, secondary effluent, or tertiary effluent in terms of 0.8 to 1.2 gallons per day per square foot, not 28 to 30, which is the old Tri-W project. So cut that in half, you're still talking 14 to 15. You're 10 times over the EPA estimates or guidelines for that kind of thing to even use that at half. And that just, it puzzles me how...
Big discussion in Golden State. You had litigation over it, I believe. On the second table that you showed, I thought that was a really good way to compare some of the different types of disposal. You left out anything about energy, and I think that's extremely important, and it could have been put in, and it should be added in. We're having changes in global patterns, and energy is going to go up. I didn't know why you talked about exporting 1,190 acre feet per year out of our basin and how that would be a detriment. If you're using ag exchange, you're taking, I understood you take 1,190 out, you bring 1,190 back that's clean and ready to be used after minor treatment. So I questioned that. I wondered about the estimates of east and west recharge. The schools, you made a comparison that the schools were just awash, but that the cemetery was a better disposal site. Well, I argue that the four schoolyards have to equal at least more than the cemetery, and they're going to be paying for this themselves. They've already started negotiations, as far as I know. So they'll be reusing and not taking anything out of the basin. And then I support the gray water and definitely purple pipe, where, you know, a minimal purple pipe, at least a basis of a third of the community where it's, you know, where it would be simple to put in, I think needs to be addressed completely. All four school sites are closer to the saltwater intrusion than the cemetery, so that again just makes me support that. The step collection installation with purple pipe certainly could be a water saving, financially saving. So if that is something that can be considered, you can take off a portion of the cost of purple pipe out of the installation of a step system, which I certainly hope we go to. So that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ann Norman, followed by Lawson Schaller.
Ann Norman, Los Osos. I have a few questions and then some comments. The questions are aimed at kind of reconciling different things that I'm hearing. So the first one is, as far as the Tri-W project was concerned, my impression that is a three-quarter to full recharge at Broderson. And so I just want to get some clarification on that. And then also from the county's town hall meeting, what I'm remembering is that Corollo Engineering said that that Tri-W only got to 2B seawater mitigation, and that it was actually at greater cost than other projects that gave higher mitigation. So I think that's worth kind of bringing to the table. I also am a little bit confused because what I heard from Rob's presentation was that when we got to level 3, we wouldn't need, the basin would be in balance. So I was understanding that we wouldn't need to import water, but then the engineering group was saying that for 1, 2, and 3, we would need to import water. So I'm a little confused by that discrepancy. Another type of thing I was trying to reconcile was whether the need to sort of redig that site because of plugging of the soil is figured into long-term O&M costs, and whether the environmental group considered those periodic impacts on that habitat. And then another sort of general comment is that I think there needs to be a lot more emphasis on water conservation above installing low-flow toilets. There's a lot more opportunity in town, and also gray water reuse might have a lot of opportunity in terms of bang for the buck. So I'd like to see that looked at. It might seem like a lot, $12 million to get to level 3B, but if in fact that balances the water basin, that seems well worth the cost, because I frankly think the $3.9 million construction figure for piping in the water seems a bit low, and then you figure in the O&M costs. And a more critical aspect of that, which no one's brought up, is how far Los Osos is down on the list for priority to be able to access California water, where other towns already, are competing for that issue. So that's something that needs to be clarified with the county.
Thank you very much. Lawson Schaller, do you have any more slips?
Good evening, Lawson Schaller, Los Osos. First, I want to thank all the TAC members for the work you've put in. I know there's an awful lot of hours on your part, so thank you. Bob, if you would clarify the $3.9 million for some that might not understand the importing of the water, where that's coming from. Was that just importing back from an out-of-town treatment plant, or was that Northern California water? What kind of volumes we might be talking there? The environmental groups said there'd be significant seawater mitigation with the Broderson site. I think there is some controversy on that. Top of page 2.5 in the report, it says the mitigation values are based on the result of groundwater modeling. I think we need really close, objective, professional engineer review on those models, what assumptions are made within the model, because there is obviously some controversy on that. Also regarding the Broderson site, the previous speaker mentioned it, how often will the leach fields need to be rebuilt or soils replaced? If you could just clarify that or confirm that, in fact, it will, and what kind of disruption may take place there. Also a question, if the water pressure isn't great enough to drive through the upper aquifer into the lower aquifer, will water then be forced to flow out to the bay? And I get maybe Dan Berman or someone, one of the engineers, can touch upon what kind of risk that might be to the bay or with the water board or state marine reserve status, et cetera. Um, the flexibility and maximizing the options, I think, are critical if we're going to balance the groundwater basin. So I'm in full support of that. And on that note, I think a decentralized option is worth further consideration, given the potential levels of seawater mitigation it offers. I know the decentralized is kind of a long shot, but we're still at least in the middle of the process, and I think it's certainly worth some discussion. I think at first, probably you might know this, or Rob, about how many years water supply do we have in our basin, roughly? I know it would be quite a guess. One quick last comment. I think this chapter really challenges affordability. I think the community needs to assess how much they're willing to pay, because I think it's so important. It's going to drive our costs up, but it's critical. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask each of the speakers, now that we have so many more and we need to move this on, to try to keep their comments to 2 minutes if you can. And I'll start it with Steve Page. Followed by Richard Marketson.
Okay. Hi, committee. I'm working with Ken Haggard now, San Luis Obispo Sustainability Group, and Slow Green Build to come up with some recommendations for the TAC committee and the county on green building your sewer. And one of the things that sort of is at the top of our list is the issue of sustainability. There really isn't any sustainability analysis in the TAC, in the fine screening at all. Sustainability is based on a triad.
Excuse me, Mr. Page, but yeah. We're talking about effluent disposal and reuse.
Right, this is part of it. This is part of it.
Okay. Please,
would you turn that? Would you set the clock back for me?
I've got it. Okay. Please go ahead.
Sustainability is a triad based on energy reduction, uses in energy reduction, environmental needs, and social cohesion. This project seems to have left the social issue out of the loop, and in terms of recharging the water back into the basin, there's really kind of like a gray area. Is this a special benefit or a general benefit to the taxpayers of Los Osos? Recharge, as far as the community is concerned, is a very expensive proposition. On top of already they're paying for a new wastewater plant, they're now paying also for recharging the basin. These two issues need to be separated from each other to ensure the social cohesion and not basically interrupt the social lifestyle of the Los Osos. Los Osos is composed of a population that is approximately 50% low income and fixed income population. And I think that if you're looking at sustainability, you have to look at the social issues and the environmental needs and the energy needs. And as far as the kind of like the small points on the issue of water recharge, I would say I keep on looking at the
Richard Marketson, followed by Dave Dugan.
Before you start the clock, I turned in my slip a half hour ago. Why are we all being cut down to 3 minutes?
Because you turned in after we started the discussion. But go ahead. I said try to keep it in 2 minutes if you can.
Page 2 of this chapter. The interface between seawater and freshwater has moved an estimated 1,200 feet inland over the last 20 years. Why are we now just getting a level of 3 severity certification from the county? We could have had a lot of help over the years with a water conservation program by now. I brought this up before, and I've talked to Rob about this. These tables were all based on information from consumption number or production numbers from a number of years ago. And the district, at least the CSD district, the last 2 years is down 100 acre feet in production. That affects these tables, even if it's at the 0.55 mitigation factor. In the one table where they talk about 160 acre feet for conservation and they give it a mitigation factor of 0.55, sorry. Is that assuming that the entire draw would be from the lower aquifer? I think that's inconsistent with the rest of the 0.55 mitigation criteria for other. Maybe you could address that or ask for clarification. The other comment I have deals with the table .3. 160 acre feet for conservation in this table is estimated based on total acre feet of flow of 1350 for the year, acre feet a year. That is inconsistent with the analysis for the flow analysis that adjusted the flow analysis by 100,000 gallons for conservation to get to the 1.2 for step and the 1.4 for gravity. Well, 100,000 gallons in annually is 110 acre feet. So you right there have a 50-acre-foot difference that I think needs to be explained at some point. And I'll leave it at that since I'm probably running out of time.
Thank you very much. Dave Dugan, followed by Joe Sparks.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos, right across the street, constructed wetlands for recharging the upper aquifer. You can take a third of that property, if not a little bit more. And there you go. You got your constructed wetlands for upper aquifer recharge. As you start pulling water out of the upper aquifer when these, the area as well wasn't there. And so you need to include those as well, because Brodison is not the only one that had percolation fields. You have to include that. Are you looking at if these, whenever the nitrate levels begin to drop, the sooner we can start using upper aquifer water? Because as soon as that becomes, we start dropping below that 10 milligrams per liter, I believe we should be allowed to pump that water. So as soon as it hits that below that mark, we should be able to pull that water from the upper aquifer. And I'm also, I've been thinking that if you use Tri-W and as a wetlands, you basically purge the upper aquifer, sort of like dilute, because it will do the job if you can send it at low enough nitrate level to Tri-W. All this whole area up here, which doesn't get touched by the Brodison. That Brodison water heads towards S&T's wells, towards that side of the basin. It doesn't come this way. And so I think that's probably another thing you need to look at, too, is that the sooner we purge the upper aquifer, the sooner we can start using upper aquifer wells. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Joe Sparks, followed by Alon Perlman.
Good evening. I'd like to thank each of you for serving on this TAC. I appreciate your efforts. One thing hopefully you can still show it tonight, I was hoping you'd show it, was the figure 2.4 in the report, because with all the numbers thrown around, it's hard to lose context. And I think that particular figure has a strong message, two strong messages. Number as well, I'd like to see you do the pro-con more in the lines of level one versus level two projects, because the message from figure 2.4 is that there's a flat cost increase going from level to level two, and yet there's a increase in the seawater mitigation. So it's a clear message that the wastewater project does want to go to level two. The other message is that level three do require purveyor participation that's significant, and so that there's basically a limitation on the wastewater project to level two mitigation. I'd also say that under 3A and the 3B scenarios, that the shift in production and the ag exchange, they're not mutually exclusive, even though the charts show them to be. Also, I would state to the community to caution making assumptions about Tri-W and Brodersen assets simply because AB 2701 and the district's Chapter 9 bankruptcy can affect what people make as assumptions on those assets. And there were comments made about Brodersen and the application rates, but again, Spencer Harris clearly has stated in a presentation to the CSD that those application rates are based on a large degree of modeling that he has done in the past. Again, thank you.
Thank you very much. Alan Perlman, followed by Chris Albee.
Before you start my time, Bill, okay, let's start it. Thanks. I just want to let you know other water sources. So I'm glad that you have looked at the other options, but since you are looking up the options, at this point you have to look at the options at work. A half-cheeked approach to seawater mitigation, which is irreversible, will simply, deferring the time at which state water or some other magical water source is found is not going to work. Alternate energy sources are not going to be found. There's some physics involved in that. So the flip side of set seawater mitigation to zero and maximize nitrate reduction is to set nitrogen reduction to zero and maximize water retention in the basin. And I think, just again, ballpark things, you can't operate on 100%, 75%, is kind of a ballpark that I would be using, and I can see that one of your plans seems to show that. And the other element is the build-out. There probably can be build-out at some time, but I don't think you could be putting the multiplier, that multiplier has to be considered, but at the same time, realistically, in the next 10 years, I don't think we will achieve it. So I'm just I'm liking the way you're doing things, but I would say that an engineering solution that front loads seawater mitigation in the next decade is probably the only thing that can prevent the collapse. If we did this 10 years ago, we might be it'd be a lot more comfortable. 10 years, if we were at the level of seawater mitigation that might be happening 5 years from now, when that seawater will be somewhere over there, the whole thing's shot anyway. As much as I don't like to believe that, it's the reality. So, and I think as far as regulatory agencies and ag reuse, there are changes. Because you guys are doing such a great job partly and because the county's doing well, I think the regulatory agencies are starting to see the light. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And our last speaker is Chris Albee.
Before my time starts, can I get 3 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, my name is Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. I've stated in the past, but I can't work up a lot of interest in these hearings, as I am one of the 46 CDO holders facing expulsion from our homes if there is any cessation in your process, excuse me, which at this moment seems to be in limbo. The county still has not taken the project, and the CSD can't take it either. All these systems you're presently talking about seem to me to involve a lot of sludge being moved around with no long-term place to take it.
Chris, we're talking about water effluent right now?
Yeah.
Okay. That's sludge.
Yeah, sure. Now, the state regulations forbidding recharge, even with tertiary treatment effluent, seems ridiculous and prevents us from
time. And we'll ask for questions or clarification that anyone would. Well, first of all, let's answer the questions that came up from the public. And Rob, you seem to take most of the notes there, so.
Mr. Chair, obviously there was quite a few questions. I don't know how much time you want to take for this. I'd be happy to answer every one that I noted.
As quickly as you can. Yes.
Okay. For Mr. Asquith, I don't believe there's been any significant communication regarding discharge of harvest water to the bay at this point with the county project team. You can clarify that. Although I do remember the Coastal Commission having some issues with that discharge to the bay also, although I can't remember the exact context. And I'll let John speak to the nitrate removal technology that his company is looking at. Let's see. For Mr. Edwards, he was looking at what kind of design would be up at the Broaderson. It's currently still programmed for leach fields, though vertical dry wells could certainly work as well. And as far as new Department of Health Service regulations, one comment I think we'll be talking about here is it's the recharge regulations that are in more of a flux than the reuse regulations, in my view, as far as slow rate application on land. For Lacey, she was questioning where the 448 acre feet comes from. That essentially is the amount of water that could be applied when Broaderson is at half speed, and it doesn't directly relate to that 8 to 10% number that actually percolates in the ground. That 8 to 10% was when Broaderson is used at full steam ahead, how much water actually makes it into the lower aquifer. If it was used at half speed, it'd be even less. So those two numbers have a little bit of a disconnect in terms of what they're used for. And as far as ag exchange and further defining that, basically we'd ask ag users to use the water for irrigation, shut off their wells, and then we would drill new wells, municipal wells, over there in the agricultural area and take that new water back from those new wells back into town for drinking water. So ag exchange would be give them the water, shut off their wells, redrill new wells in their area, and take the water back. And then I don't believe gray water, although that's, I think, a very good topic for discussion, was analyzed in any of the reports at this point. Let's see. Creek discharge, why that was eliminated. Creek discharge, why it was eliminated. During the rough screening process, essentially that and direct injection were eliminated primarily because of the high level of treatment and the regulatory requirements. It was viewed as being more costly than other options that would have the same effect. Although the purveyors have the ability to put those options back on the table, if we feel that a direct recharge, direct injection program is warranted, to the extent that the purveyors want to fund that research, and they might, it's something we could still look at, but on our nickel. And then higher level of investigation than what other communities locally have for seawater intrusion issues in terms of the different ways that was approached. As far as the cost benefit of gray water and urban reuse, yes, that's something that was addressed generically for urban reuse in the report. We don't have detailed numbers on that. One idea that's been kicked around is for new subdivisions to potentially have purple pipe that are developer funded. As far as the application rate at Broaderson, I know that the fine screening report utilizes the same amount of leach field pipe, so a half speed would be half the application rate in the 15 gallon per day per square foot range. So that's, I think, a worthy discussion for the future. 0.8 is what we use for sand for septic tank effluent. I think that based on the FUGRO report that was done, there's a belief that you could get a significantly higher rate, though I know there's still a lot of discussion as to how high you could go. Was the cost of land for Broderson out of the analysis? Yes, I believe it was, and to the extent that those assets could be sold would be extra revenue. But I know that there's been some grant funds that have been invested in Broderson. Some discussion on the schoolyards and the use of the upper aquifer. I know that the schools have the ability to do that directly, and they're actually pursuing a program to do that currently. Let's see. Try to be another one. Starts to get fuzzy as you get later into the evening, doesn't it? As far as the engineering group and the need to import water at level 3, I think is a question that I also put in my notes. As far as the cost to redig Broderson every 10 to 15 years, the report refers to the need to reconstitute Broderson every 10 to 15 years. It wasn't clear to me, and I think a worthy question, whether that was included in the operations and maintenance costs. It appears to me that maybe it wasn't, so that's something that needs to be clarified. And then there was a question, as it becomes more clear as we get closer to the comment, how many years of water supply are left in the basin? You know, the basin has, and I don't remember the exact number, but it's over 100,000 acre-feet of storage. However, a lot of our assets, our well assets, are on the west side, and both water companies. And so even though we have a lot of storage in the overall basin, our assets are on the west side. So the longevity of those assets is much less than just taking the shortfall and dividing by the storage in the basin. I think immediate steps are necessary, and both purveyors are taking steps. Again, from Steve Page, would agree that the special benefit is associated with just disposing of the water, and the general benefit would be recharge water supply benefits. And that's all my brain can hold.
There were some other comments. Engineering, did you have an answer on the...
If you look at those, they're... If you look at the seawater intrusion mitigation portion of the chart, none of the blue fills up the entire white, and that's because we need 740 acre feet per year to balance the seawater intrusion portion of the basin. At build-out, though, that's at build-out. Okay. And then the question on the... imported water and the costs. I'm going to let John talk about that.
The cost for importing water was out of Appendix A of the fine screening report. If you look at level 3, 3B or A, I forget which one it was, but there's a footnote, $3.9 million for construction of a pipeline from Los Osos to Morro Bay at a length of 5.5 miles. And it quoted the cost per acre foot for imported water being between $1,000 and $1,500 an acre foot. To answer the ion exchange question Dr. Asquith asked initially, Golden State Water Company, first off, I do want to say that all water purveyors are very interested in what the wastewater project is doing, and they are taking measures to rectify this imbalance. I know the Golden State has already, since the seawater intrusion study, has shifted pumping east and up to the effect of reducing pumping from the lower zone by 180 acre feet per year. Our current rate case before the Public Utilities Commission is to bring in an ion exchange treatment facility. It's an ion exchange facility. It's not electrodialysis or ionization. It's an ion exchange treatment facility. We are using probably the state-of-the-art type system Ion exchange, typically when you bring water through it, in a fixed bed ion exchange, you waste about 3% of the water that comes into it. And here locally on the Central Coast, disposal of that brine is quite expensive. This unit that we have will produce a waste stream of like 0.25%. So very small quantities of brine is generated during this ion exchange process. And we've proposed to bring that into Los Osos, and it has a great capacity of 500 gallons a minute. And we have a well called our Skyline well that we're going to use. The Skyline well has been analyzed. It has excellent water quality except for the nitrates. It's about 90 milligrams per liter. And we feel we could reduce the nitrates very effectively, and that would reduce the and that is an upper zone well, and that would further reduce the pumping from the lower zone by 240 acre feet a year. So that's 420 total. The Skyline well does not use the entire capacity of that ion exchange system, and the water purveyors have met. So I think I answered those questions.
I think that was a very, very enlightening answer. Go ahead, Russ.
Just real quick, there was two speakers commented on the issue of spray fields, and I don't think anybody likes to take water out of the basin, but there are certain times when you have to. For example, when you start up your system and you don't have your ag exchange worked out, then you have excess water, and you're going to have to put it someplace, and that's what the spray field is for. There also could be an emergency situation where we need to get rid of our extra product from our facility. And then another thing is that it's not always possible to stuff all 1.2 or 1.3 million gallons back into our system. And therefore, the excess has to go somewhere, and it's not going to the bay, not going to the creek, and therefore spray fields play a role there. But the goal would be to keep the spray field use to a minimum because we want to preserve our resource, our water. And then Richard Markinson asked a very good question and about the 0.55 mitigation factor for water conservation. And it's my understanding that all three purveyors pump from both the lower aquifer and the upper aquifer. And the intelligent water purveyor, when they have less water to pump, will stop pumping from the lower aquifer. And hence, that will give you a 0.55 mitigation factor.
Yeah. Thank you. Karen? Okay.
I wanted to talk about spray fields. I mentioned something briefly. It dawned on me when I revisited the Ripley report that we do have an alternative for handling full capacity without buying a whole bunch of acreage at Tonini, and that will be some of the farmers who are outside the basin. You know, they need that water. They said they would take as much water as we could give them. So I think that that is a good alternative to Tonini. Another problem with Tonini, I believe, is potentially the Williamson Act. It did come up, but I've seen that question bounced around, so I wanted clarification on that. Another thing around ag, both ag in lieu and ag exchange, the nitrogen levels. I've seen conflicting reports on what the farmers need and also what comes out of advanced secondary treatment and tertiary treatment. For instance, I believe at the golf course, they're currently getting 20 milligrams per liter. 22, thank you very much. And that the farmers would be happy to get water with that level of nitrogen and that we would not have to go through nitrification as well as denitrification so we could save ourselves some dollars there. So I think that there are some, how do I say, mixed information flying around that I would really like to see clarified before, you know, and I'm sure will be clarified in the process that the county does in going through value engineering and further research. One other thing I just want to mention briefly is someone on the Ripley team that said it so well for me, at least, and that would be Bamanshig. As it relates to disposal, he said, disposal of effluent should be viewed as an option of last resort in Los Osos, especially because water supply is so critical.
And if it says one of the things we're going to do is have a contract with these outside users, and look, they're interested. They're going to say, well, show us the contract, show us the ink, where is it? If you say, look, our cost estimate includes, if we have to, we'll go buy the property. Then they say, okay, well, now we know you can do it. Well, in the period where you're developing your project, you're going out, and I think one of Mr. Schaller's comments, you're going out as early as possible and developing those ag relationships so you don't have to buy the property. Or you're identifying the level of incentive that would be necessary in order to secure that commitment, far short of owning, you know, fee title in the property. So it's a very conservative analysis. The other thing on ag exchange, if you look at the cost estimates on those ag exchange numbers, that's to purchase the ag land. There's $9 million in there in those level three projects to just out and out go out and buy the ag land at $40,000 an acre. So there's a very conservative assumption embedded in those numbers, and to the extent that as early in the process as you can, you advance those understandings with ag, you can do a heck of a lot before you have to buy hundreds and hundreds of acres of property. The other comment I wanted to make is on the nitrogen levels. You know, over at Sea Pines, the number is 22. There is nitrification and denitrification that happens at Sea Pines. However, it's not to a very high level. It's not to get to 7. So I think the expectation based on that level for one and the NWRI report for another is that, yeah, you probably have to be in the teens or maybe 20. You'll have to be something less than 40, which would be zero nitrification, denitrification. And so it's a lot better than going all the way to 7 for those, but there would be some partial, and that's, I think the report's accurate in that regard, but Sea Pines is at 22, which is partial.
Yeah. The Environmental Committee feels very much outnumbered tonight, so I'm going to let them go.
Excuse me. Yeah, we just had a couple responses to the comments that came up, and a couple of questions, I guess, for staff or for Rob. I think Lindy brought up a good question, something that we talked about in our working group, but the information was not available in the fine screening report, which is the energy consumption required for these various alternatives, because we're talking about, in some cases, pumping significant distances either up to Broderson or out to the valley or back from the valley. So I think to get some idea of what the energy consumption factors are would be helpful to us, so we can include that in our analysis. And I'd like Dan to talk a little bit about, and I know that Julie and Jeff left, but Dan would like to talk just briefly about the idea of using the creek for disposal of the treated effluent as far as the impact on the bay. But before then, I'd just like to respond to just a comment that Al Barrow made. We didn't consider directional boring when we looked at trenching for primarily two reasons. Trenching is the worst case scenario, so we're looking at what the worst case is, although directional boring may ultimately be how that's done. But I think the other issue, so, you know, whether you agree with that, I mean, I'm just saying that we didn't look at that because the contractor is going to decide how that's done. So the worst impact comes from the trenching, so that's what we looked at. And I'd like Dan to talk a little bit about the impacts on the bay.
Sure. Please, can we have the audience please allow the talk to continue? Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you, Bill. I wanted to comment specifically, Al, I think you concluded your remarks with a concern that we weren't listening, and I actually thought you had some really good comments. San Luis saw it as a potential source or a potential place that could use water with relatively high nitrogen levels. And then I think in general this discussion about distinguishing between reuse and disposal is really important. I think as Mr. Brady mentioned, we do have this kind of challenging, this water, our problem with saltwater intrusion and with the overdraft of our water basin is this enormous challenge in its own right, and we have this enormous wastewater challenge, and they're interrelated, and so this chapter is sort of our struggle to try and figure out how best we can integrate those, and keeping in mind that there's an overlapping but separate
set of users for our water resources and for this wastewater project within the Prohibition Zone makes it all the more complicated. I guess a couple other comments. In terms of the creek discharge, I actually didn't come into this just off the board opposed to creek discharge, although it does have a lot of issues associated with it. I think I became less excited about it when we heard from Cleith and Associates that in terms of the sort of mitigation factor we're talking about in here, that they didn't think it was going to be a very effective recharge tool into the lower aquifer. I think they said 0.1 was my memory, but we can check back on that it wasn't going to be that effective at recharging, and so especially not down to the lower aquifer. So that sort of made it less appealing given all the other hurdles associated with it. And then Ann mentioned about the Broderson leach fields. Yes, our understanding, as Rob mentioned, is they will be periodically torn up. Depending on the cycle, you could make some ecological argument that it's disturbance. But, effectively, you're taking that 7 or 8 acre portion of it and just the habitat is going to be trashed, essentially. You might get some stuff on there in between that would be nice, but for a worst-case point of view, just that part's written off. I do think, and somebody else mentioned this, and Joe Sparks mentioned it, in terms of Broderson being an asset, there's an open environmental and legal question about, my understanding is Broderson is already sort of required as mitigation for the damage that was done to the Tri-W site, and so I don't think it would be so easy as just selling it in terms of it being an asset that we could invest somewhere else. And I know if we did do that, a significant portion of the purchase price was a state grant that would probably have to be just immediately repaid. So I don't know how much asset is there, but it's certainly not the full value of the property. And I think that aside from the sort of overall environmental perspective that maybe we didn't state
there, there's a possibility of some importing of water. We don't know the quantity or quality, but there's water out there maybe that we can bring back if we have to use that for a spray fill. Broderson is something that I've looked at for years. I've actually had a lot of discussions on Broderson along with Frugro and Cleith and other professions in the field, professionals in the field. There is some difference of opinion on the perk rates that Broderson can actually take, the infiltration rate and the percolation rate, and whether or not it can really accept that. I've looked at the guidelines and what they, for EPA guidelines and what you'd use to design a field and what was actually used to design that field. And there is some conflict. And I've always had issues with Broderson and how it was the other aspect besides the perk and infiltration rates was the possibilities of some minor liquefaction issues that it could cause. And that's something that's never been really addressed. But the thing that really concerns me is whether or not that's a viable site, considering the fact that it's in projects 2A, 2B, and 3A, and it's an integral part of our disposal system. And I think I would encourage the county to do an independent analysis of that by another engineering firm to see if they come up with the same rates, same infiltration, see if it has the same capacity as was designed by Montgomery Watts and Harza. And I would strongly encourage that because it's a pretty big number, that the difference of opinion on that. Rob even mentioned 0.8. It is 0.8 to 1.2, I believe, is usually what you use for leach fields around that area. And they're using 30 gallons per square foot, I think it was.
Gallon per square foot.
Okay. But anyway, that's my comment on Broderson. We've looked at that for years, and there's been a lot of professionals that have looked at that for years. And there's a difference of opinion on what that field can really take, what capacity it really has. And I would like to see an independent review of that site since it is an integral part of our disposal system.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a couple of comments. If you look at Appendix Table A2, you'll find some energy numbers for all the disposal options. And so that might be a good thing to refer to in the environmental Table A-2. As far as the Broderson site, some of the challenges over time with Broderson is the perk rate, the ability to feel comfortable that you're handling future regulations. And this goes to a comment that I'd like to make on the environmental group's analysis. I would just suggest for your consideration that in your pro-con analysis, I noticed that in several of the options, you listed future unknown regulatory changes as being a potential con, and that con didn't appear in the Broderson analysis. And I would suggest that you might want to have it there, just because, to my way of thinking, it's that option that has the most uncertainty from a future regulatory standpoint, as compared to the other land application options, essentially spray fields and reuse. And then as far as recharge on Broderson, I think one absolute necessity of this approach, and as needing to put all the water up at Broderson. So I think that's an important consideration.
Just from the conversation, Dan and I have another question. For storage ponds, in the fine screening report, it talks about storage ponds being located on the highest priority treatment sites. But is there any other available options for the location of storage ponds? We're talking about constructive wetlands. I understand that. But we talked about Brannan or Jacamazi, but is there any other sites that have been identified or discussed?
Maybe not specifically in the report, but certainly whatever spray field site you purchase would be a significant storage availability option.
John.
I just kind of want to make a couple comments. First, one of the things about the Tri-W project had one disposal method for effluent. And, Cal Cities had a problem with it, and it became an intractable situation between the two purveyors. This particular project has a multitude of options here. And what Rob was talking about is the flexibility, and we've stressed flexibility in our analysis. On the one side, level 1A, where we have the spray fields, 1,190 acre feet a year going to the spray fields. Well, considering that the basin is recharged by about 3,500 acre feet a year, that's a pretty significant shortfall. You're taking almost a third of your recharge away from the basin, and that will have a detrimental effect on the sustainable yield of the basin. All of the analysis that we've been looking at has been focusing in on the lower zone. The upper zone we're almost ignoring, which brings me to the Broderson field. The Broderson field is really the only option out there that provides for a direct recharge of the upper zone. One of the issues with that is having the Broderson zone is an important element for this portfolio of effluent disposal. Startup operations where you're exporting all of this effluent out of the basin is acceptable on a short-term basis because, first, the upper zone is underdeveloped. We're not extracting near what the sustainable yield is. There's outflow to the bay right now from the upper zone. So spray fields will basically buy us time to evaluate what the percolation rates are in Broderson so the issue of the validity of the percolation rates can be tested. The other issue is water quality. These recharge regulations, the NWRI report talks about the recharge regulations. Recharge regulations has several different protective mechanisms that may be worthwhile looking at in terms of Broderson. There's a couple of things. The protective mechanisms is they require a certain amount of dilution of the waste, the effluent before recharge. There's a horizontal separation between the recharge area and the wells extracting disposal techniques are going to offer us. And I think it's important to look at the seawater intrusion issue, but we can't take our eye off the upper zone as well. To export almost 1,200 acre feet a year on a continuous basis would be disastrous because we would have to go back to the lower zone, and all of these seawater mitigation factors that we're talking about will be moot because we'll have to provide supply. If the sustainable yield is significantly reduced, then we have to go and import water. So all of these effluent costs that we're looking at really have to be weighed against the cost of importing water.
Thank you, John. Do we have any questions from, I'll just leave it kind of open, from any group to any other group of their presentation or clarification? Start right here, Rob.
Sorry for making so many comments tonight. On the, just a few more nits on the environmental, as far as the chlorine being, I'm not picking on you, as far as the chlorine being required, you know, it's preferred to have it be disinfected out in the spray fields. It's just not a hardcore requirement necessarily, but you can leave it in there because I'm sure it would end up being chlorinated. But and then as far as the shallow well use at the schools, that's actually not of wastewater origin. So the issue of tertiary treatment and denitrification wouldn't even enter into that equation because it's just pumping shallow groundwater and it wouldn't be a treatment issue.
Russell, go ahead.
Could I quickly follow up on what Rob was saying, because we're on the same page here? If you look under urban reuse shallow wells for a pro, you have minimal saltwater intrusion mitigation, and I think that should be maximum, or else put it as a con, because I think it should be maximum.
We'll just change those to the numbers. That way we're not attached
to Well, the point is that currently the schools are using water that could be drawn from the lower aquifer. And by them sinking their own wells in the shallow aquifer, they're reducing the draw in the lower aquifer, hence the mitigation factor of 0.55 would be appropriate. So that's a good thing. Yeah.
Well, that's why we just put the numbers
in. Okay. Other comments, questions from the TAC to each other?
I just have one more. Oh, I'm sorry, I was too active tonight. Level four, why is it out and should it be in? I think Cleith and Associates developed options for level four without importation. The reason that they weren't included in the report, boiling it down, is that it required such participation on behalf of the purveyors, it was felt that it'd be extremely presumptuous to say, hey, you're going to shut off all these wells, you're going to drill all these new wells. But now that the purveyors, I think, have some imminent cooperation, I think, just like one of the tax comments that, you know, we needed to have Tri-W compare side by side in all the tables, and that will be included in the final report, hopefully sooner rather than later. The level four, there may be some additional discussion that if the purveyors can engage soon prior to the production of the final report, we might have more level four considered in the final report perhaps.
Next week we'll start with Chapter 7, which starts at bringing it all together and ultimately have a pro-con analysis that we feel very confident in, and we'll be presenting not only to the Board of Supervisors but also to the community. With that, I'm going to we have a few speakers who wanted to speak in on general issues, and we will open the floor to them now. Lost. Yes, you can. Okay. We have let's go 2.5 minutes, okay? I can reprogram. I know how to do that now. Okay, so we'll start. Keith Weimer, did you want to speak, or you're going to send something in? Oh, I'm sorry, Keith back there, excuse me. And followed by Lindy Owen. Okay, I'm just looking in the wrong direction.
Just have the wrong person. Just a few follow-up comments. You're representatives of the community, and again, I thank you for it.
But this process seems to be coming to a head pretty quickly here, and I think the community is still left with a lot of questions. I know I am, and I think that you need to, you know, the suggestions like Mr. Fouché made, that there's an independent review, and I suggest that there be a further review of the O&M for gravity and step, because the basis for their figures were very, very inconclusive and shaky in their rough analysis. Total flow figures are still a big question. There are a lot of questions still hanging out there, and things are coming, you know, together pretty quickly here. So I think the TAC needs to make a stand and say, you know, get us all the information we need right now. Get the independent review if you need it independently reviewed, so that you have all the facts you need to put this in front of the community. Regarding what you said, Rob, about this being conservative estimates and this fine screening, I agree that they are conservative estimates, but remember, part of the object here is for the community to feel good enough about the possibility of affordability, at least, for the project to be okayed in a 218. So I think when you pick a criteria, the environmental committee picks a criteria like independence, and then completely, you know, talks about contracts as being a negative or a con, and limits the mitigation to cost and the benefits to cost that may afford, then you're really making, you know, you're being so erring so much on the side of conservatism that you're presenting a pretty dire, you know, prospect to the community in terms of the costs that are going to be laid out there. If there are, as a few people mentioned, purveyors is out there. Tonini should be looked at as an ag exchange, lateral boring, of course, is going to be determined probably by an EIR, and it should be assumed to be the case for small bore pipe.
Can you kind of bring it to a conclusion?
I will. Definitely the decentralized system must be on the table. That needs to be looked at real closely. This whole, the purple pipe and urban reuse and the lower cost of water to the citizens that would bring is extremely important to look at. And environmental mitigation for Tri-W, remember, this brought about by Broderson, could also be used for the different sites that maybe need for a centralized system. So that would be a benefit that the Broderson could bring in terms of the centralized system, decentralized system as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Lindy Owen, followed by Dave Duggan.
Hi again, Lindy Owen. One issue was that I think that one thing that is lacking before anybody has any real numbers is to get metered, get metering on all wells in the basin. At this point, we don't know. I have no idea how much the farm out there that keeps his water so he can have grass-fed beef is using, and I'm not sure how much some of the other farmers are using. And as the future comes along, a lot of people that are looking for water and farm opportunities are buying in this area. I agree that I think part of what's unnerving to me is that I wish we had done this in a whole different fashion, where you had Project A and we actually had teams to go after conventional technology, the best you could do with, you know, a team doing that, and then another team going after step and alternative types. Because I see this as being possibly part step collection, partially on-site. If this town was just one flat place, you could say everything would probably work about the same. But we have so many different areas, and, you know, I just hopefully as you go through the process, something like that might come out as the best way to approach putting a full project from start to finish and putting all those components in, because right now it's still very confusing. I also was concerned if all the numbers that were being used tonight and are generally being used, are those the build-out numbers? And have you established an exact build-out? I know it's in the 1900s. That would make a difference, because I personally think that until we have this resolved and know what we're going to be doing for reuse and a water, you know, a sustainable water supply, we should not be looking at future development. That is what we achieve if we do this right. We do it wrong, we're all in trouble. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lindy. Dave Dugan, followed by Al Barrow.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. 24th of July, at the, I believe it is, at the supervisors, they're going to have the Severity 3 recommendations brought before the board on the water. So I would like to see everybody here, though the basin plan may have something, or the Estero Bay plan may have something else, which is way too high. But I really do recommend that you guys also, like I said before, get that Coastal Commission conditional permit to begin building and read applicable sections in there towards this wastewater project, and you'll find that the mitigation, the costs for Tri-W are really high, and that an outside plant outside of town don't need as much money to spend on mitigation costs. Mitigation costs is really what killed Tri-W, as well as somebody trying to stick a park there. And then also to get a hold of this report and see what these new ordinances or what is going to become of this report by Caruso on the 24th. And this is a big deal on the 24th. I think it's just as big as what you guys are doing. So pay attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Al Barrow, followed by Bo Cooper.
I would say good night, but you're not done yet. But anyway, things are moving along. You guys are getting better at your process. And, you know, it was a tough project. And I really appreciate what you say, John, about the facts about the water supply. And I think that's really important that he does give us some facts. It's not it's been. Number one, I want to say Orenco as a concept of STEP was really way over-costed in this. And I think you really need to ask the county to call them and get their actual numbers, because they are around $50 million. They're not 134. They're not 64 and 80 and so on and so forth. I think that really is a horrible mistake, and you're hurting yourself. And I want to know if the spread of numbers 134 to 207 is still on the table, if that has changed, or if that is a fixed figure. You also have to include, if you go with state revolving fund financing, 6.5 penalty added to that. So that would make those numbers 140 and 213 something. That's the spread that I'm seeing. And I don't think any of the people that I've talked to lately are saying, oh, no, we're not going to vote for a blank check. So, you know, it's going to be a tough thing. But I can still say the work that you're doing is going to be very helpful. Charlotte County should be a good model for the STEP collection. Charlotte County is one that's put in 5,000 units in a developed area, and they have the bid tabs, and I've sent them to you. I don't know if you have them, Rob, and I think they should be shared with everybody in the committee. Those bid tabs are very revealing about the cost. I think as far as water supply goes, developers are willing to pay if they can get well-served permits, and they will share the cost. And I think in that end, it would be a good idea to get a committee that would go and find the large property owners. There's, you know, about 11 of them, I think, that are owner, you know, and go to them and say, well, are you willing to do the 3-to-1 mitigation for water? And
can you bring it to conclusion, Al?
I can do that. Finally, the upper aquifer water supply, is that really 100,000 acre feet of water? And I'd like to have the answer, how many acre feet do we have in the upper aquifer? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bo Cooper, followed by...
So the best, most affordable, environmentally best engineered components and put them together, but no set of components is affordable. So we have a problem with it. Has affordability is one core issue, one core value. The other core value is getting a sewer that will work, that and it comes in within the money. What are we going to do about that? And so usually the nice TAC member and myself kind of stare at each other and say, I don't know. Well, how are we going to resolve this? The best I can say is that we need to step, that the county and yourself need to step out of a certain box, that the parameters, it has to be what is within the fine screening report. I think we need to step out of that box and decide that something like Orenco needs to be brought into the box needs to be considered, that that may be affordable. The affordability side of it, you can't count on grants. We just don't know they're there. But we do know that Renko, maybe people, something else like that, might be. So it needs to be brought into the consideration. That hasn't been done as fully as I think needs to be done so far. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lacey Cooper, followed by Lisa Schicker.
Lacey Cooper. I just wanted to bring up, this kind of goes with what we're talking about tonight. I was concerned about the price tags on the disposal and the saltwater mitigation and, you know, reuse and things like that. And there was a presentation by Pio Lombardo to a clean water group a couple weeks ago. And he just, I'm not endorsing his system, but he was talking about a different approach with like cluster denitrification at the septic tank and then cluster, small cluster treatment plants. And he was very big on, you know, reuse and mitigating saltwater intrusion using purple pipe, but back to individual homes. And he was claiming that it was up to a level 5. And I guess my point was his was $30,000 to $35,000 per household, which is high. It's like $160 million. But you were getting a lot of, saltwater mitigation. You were getting a lot of bang for your buck. And so I think, as Bo said, looking outside the box might be helpful when you're talking about amounts of dollars. You know, say his kind of system versus importing water. Say it might be more expensive, but it might be worth it. So those kind of ideas. And I know it's outside the scope of what you were given, but it I think that goes along with affordability. Bo brought up the Renko, he's talking, you know, design build, you might cut out some of the middlemen. That would be really expensive and get a cheaper system that way, but still a fine system. And I guess I just wanted to put that out. I think affordability really has to kind of move back up in these considerations.
Could you bring it to a conclusion?
I'll just wind it up. Affordability, affordability, affordability. How's that?
Thank you very much. Lisa Schicker, followed by Frank Asilio.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Lisa Schicker. Just a few comments overall about the role of the TAC, as I see it, besides we've got about 50 pages of comments. I don't know what you're going to do with them, but we're going page by page, probably just like you. And we have a lot of technical comments. And the general overall comment is a lot of the data comparing the alternatives do not seem accurate. The spread does not seem right. I have a lot of questions about the tables and the quantities and the amounts. So that seems to be coming up in every chapter. And also, energy was a biggie for us, the energy and the addition of that. So what are you doing with our comments? Are you doing anything with them? Are you incorporating them in any way? We're passing them on to Carollo as well, but what are you doing with those comments in your pro-con analysis? And what are your plans for your presentation? What are you going to present to the county, and what is the format? And I know you're discussing that, but it's very important. And again, don't just focus on the report, the affordability, the outside the box, the other reports that have already been done. Incorporate those into your presentation. That's what I ask. And very importantly, it's because you do have a financial aspect to your committee, and it affects environmental and engineering as well, take a stand on the order of the 218 vote. Offer an opinion. This is a pro-con analysis of the project and the process. Take a stand on the 218 vote and how it's being arranged.
Can you wrap it up now,
Lisa? Do you want this to be successful? If you want it to be successful, use your expertise and your knowledge and your skills to take a stand on that process and recommend to the county. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would ask the county, though, I haven't seen a report from the CSD Wastewater Committee. No, I haven't. So we'll look into that. Frank Asilio.
Okay, Frank Asilio. I'm glad to hear Rob talk about consideration of a level 4. I think it's very appropriate. Also, I'd like to comment to John about the importing of water. you said there was a footnote, approximately $9 point something million for a pipeline. That would also take in consideration the purveyors. Water purveyors would have to cooperate on that water, I presume. Also, I'd like to know from the Financial Committee the cost, because I talked to Morro Bay Public Works and I talked to the county since they are the contracting agency. And I understand Santa Barbara may be included. If we got water from import, they would have some say in this. I think it's real important to get an actual cost, not only the pipeline, you know, to the cost, but since Morro Bay is paying about $1,400, we also have to pay, I believe, part of the cost from Morro Bay to San Luis. And also, you're looking at today's dollars. And I would like you to look at 5 years down the road dollars, because the cost, and that's all in the water report. They have a report. It's about yay thick. I've perused a little bit of it. There's a lot of numbers in there that shows you the cost and how it's increased over the years. So you can look at that, and you can kind of get an idea of the cost, you know, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. And I like what John said, that you got to include that cost in your project to see the cost of importing water. It's not going to be $1,200. I think it's going to be over $1,500 an acre, probably more than that. By the time you build, maybe $1,800. An acre foot. So look at that real carefully, because that can make a very important decision about which way we go with the water. You know, when I live
very much. I understand we have one more slip. And our last speaker is Alan Perlman.
Dan. Last and least. The calculations for global warming were made about 100 years ago, but somehow it's news to us. Most of the sewer technology, those calculations were made about 500 million years ago. The rest is just containment. The Simpson Act has been damaged due to the actions of the governor, and there may be some leverage within that, hopefully, because that is a very large amount, a large portion of the water usage here in Los Osos. Cacho was asking some very hard questions of Pavel Ogren, specifically the 218 vote. He basically went to the obvious. How are these people going to vote for a project that they don't hasn't been defined? And part of Pavel's answer is, it was a bit of a long answer, so which isn't necessarily good. But the bottom line is he was talking about flexibility, and so you people here may need to create that consensus and the gravitas that you have is what's going to allow that that flexibility, that your ability to project that you know what you're doing is what's going to allow the regulatory agencies to give the project the room it needs to breathe. And so whether it's adding a concrete pad for undefined generator that's not yet been found to be needed, modularity, it's an unprecedented project. I hope you engineers can really engineer the glass for the amount of water. And
can you bring it to a conclusion?
I will bring it to a conclusion, yeah. Well, thank you for your time. It's a great milestone for you. I hope you, I think you can do this for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Just one quick announcement. Okay, a comment first.
I'd like to comment on the public comment. I think Keith raised a question about do we get the emails and do we answer them, or who raised that question? How do we incorporate the comments that we received? We did receive some emails, and Ann sent us emails specifically. And I was going to comment on that publicly, but I prefer we can just for time purposes, I'll discuss it with you. But I just wanted to let everybody know that we do get all those emails, and we do either incorporate them in or, you know, not. But at least we consider them all. So I would be willing to talk to Ann afterwards relative to her email regarding part of the environmental report last week. So, but we do get all those and we do comment on them.